Fully Loaded Chew is tobacco-free, long cut in pouches that gives you the same pack, dip, spit, and buzz that you're used to without tobacco. Fully Loaded Chew comes in 9 flavors and is made with all food-grade ingredients and tobacco-free nicotine, the purest form of nicotine there is. To give us a try, head on over to fullyloadedchew.com for a $1 can of chew with free shipping when you enter the code OUTDOOR1. OUTDOOR and the number 1. Lastly, many outdoorsmen are trying to quit tobacco altogether, and Fully Loaded Chew may be that first step. For more information on our product line, visit fullyloadedchew.com.
Hey guys and gals, welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoor Podcast, where you will be educated, entertained, and equipped to get more out of your outdoor experience. So hold on tight, because here we go. Hello and welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. Hope everybody's doing good out there. I've had a pretty good week, and I'm ready to knock out a nice podcast this afternoon. Let's see here. Didn't get any feedback on the college football talk last week, so either you guys don't care or you just got nothing to say about it. So maybe I need to take that cue and just lay off of that for a while. But anyway, let's see here. This last weekend, got out to the property. Didn't get to get near as much done as I was hoping. Kind of one of the downsides to having multiple properties is we move a lot of equipment back and forth. And when I got up there, I needed all the equipment on one property, and my dad and brother had all the equipment on the other property because they were cutting hay and hauling stuff around. And so didn't have any equipment at my disposal, and that's kind of what I was shooting for. I wanted to work on some roads and do a little food plot prep, so didn't get to do any of that. I did, however, go check on my one Cellink camera that was not sending pictures, and I was correct. I had turned the camera on, but I had not turned the Cellink on. So luckily it was taking pictures, got to see that, had, I think, 2 does on the camera, and got the Cellink turned on, and it's working now, so... So I now have 3 cell cameras and 2 cell links, and so doing pretty good. So far, I like them. The quality when it sends a picture is not super great. I think it really diminishes the quality in order to send it. But, you can definitely still tell what it is and all that good stuff. I haven't got a night photo. I feel like the night photos are going to be better or just easier to see than the daytime photos. And so still waiting on that, but... Got several cameras out, and I'm going to try my hardest not to go touch any of those cameras for several weeks. I went basically 2 weeks in a row kind of back in there to get them all set up, and so I just don't want to do that anymore. Got my first nice buck on camera, though, a big, heavy 8-pointer. I don't recognize him. He looks a lot like the deer that I killed this last year. I mean, a lot like him. But obviously that deer is on my wall, so it's not the same one, but it's just kind of cool to see, similar looking deer, in the same area, just kind of how the genetics work. But so that was really cool. This coming weekend might do a little fishing. Buddy and I are headed out. We're going to do some drone work on the property, take some videos and stuff. So that'll be fun. And, not a whole lot else going on. It's really hot. Work's pretty busy. That's about all I have going on, but got a really good podcast for you guys today. Today I'm talking to Dwayne Carter, and we go in deep on coyote hunting. And coyote hunting is something that I've done quite a bit of, but it's been a while. I had a buddy, an old high school buddy, that he got real into it, and he used to hunt a bunch of tournaments and stuff. And so we would go a lot back in the day. I never hunted any of the tournaments with him, but just kind of when he was doing it for fun, and he tried to film for a little while, and so I was always just a trigger man, and, my family had property, so he wanted to come hunt our property, so I enjoyed it. I really loved doing it. It's something I'd like to do more, but it was something that, I wouldn't call myself an expert at, and so it was really cool talking to Dwayne, having an expert guy who does it a ton. I mean, he's killed a lot of coyotes in his day, as he'll talk about, and done some tournaments and even helped organize one. So yeah, just a great conversation. And so really excited about this one. I hope you guys are too. Something a little different. I don't think we've done really any varmint hunting stuff other than hogs. And so, yeah, really excited for this one. It came out great. And so without further ado, here's my podcast on coyote hunting with Dwayne Carter. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show today. Today I'm talking to Dwayne Carter. How you doing, Dwayne?
I'm doing good, John. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. It's nice and hot outside, but right now I'm just sitting in the man cave and talking to you, so no complaints right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dwayne, before we get off the deep end, why don't you just give us a quick little, you know, who you are, where you're from, and what you do type thing.
Okay. Well, I'm Dwayne Carter, and I'm from around the Shawnee area my whole life pretty well. I hunt for a TV show currently, Outdoor Nation TV. A great group of guys, Jared Eversall and Rick Gage are the hosts of it, local television show. I started filming coyote hunts in around 2008, still filming pretty well. Hunted with a TV show here, there, and then kind of went on my own and just started kind of coyote hunting and making videos and putting them on my own little hunting page. And, man, I've had a blast doing it. It's pretty fun. Real enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Keep going. Sorry, I feel like I interrupted you there.
No, you didn't interrupt me. I don't really know how far in depth you want to go with that.
That's plenty good for me. That's plenty good for me. So, well, I think our main topic today is going to be coyote hunting. And so before we get, you know, too crazy into it, why don't you just give us a little background? What kind of got you into coyote hunting? You know, how'd you get started and all that stuff?
Well, in 2005, you know, I was from Dale. And back in 2005, the early 2000s, there wasn't a whole lot of coyote hunters around. So around 2005, a good buddy of mine, Justin Carpenter, introduced me to it. You know, he was from Prague, and Prague's 30 miles away. Well, there was a group of outstanding predator hunters from the Prague area, but around my home, around Dale and Bethel and Meeker area, there weren't a whole lot of coyote hunters. So I'm buddying up with Justin, and he's telling me about all this coyote hunting, and I'm like, you know, I've never done it. I'm intrigued by it. You know, I get to hunt something else, or, you know, throughout the rest of the year. And so he takes me out, and he calls up the coyote, and you know, I think, man, that's cool. That's neat. And it wasn't long after that I went out. Matter of fact, where I just killed a coyote yesterday, on video, just south of where I currently live, I called up and killed my very first coyote in 2005. And man, it was neat. It was just, you know, I was out there by myself, you know, with an old, I can't even remember what gun. I think I had a Thompson Encore and a 22-250, and I was blowing a mouth call, and I just sat on a terrace, and here comes this coyote, you know, and I tricked, he comes out about 100 yards galloping, and I whistled at him and stopped him and shot him. And I was like, man, that's pretty cool. You know, I just outsmarted a coyote. I just hauled up, you know, it wasn't like deer hunt where you're sitting there waiting on something to happen. I actually went out and made something happen. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty cool. So, you know, I've got a whole bunch of fresh ground over in my area where there weren't a whole lot of coyote hunters. And so I start going out after work. I worked at Shawnee Milling at the time. I start going out after work and I start coyote hunting. And man, about every time I blew a critter call, there were coyotes coming in, you know, and I'm killing two or three or four an afternoon after work. And I'm going back to work at Shawnee Milling. You know, I'm an 18, 19 year old kid, you know, who deer hunted a little bit, but, you know, not known as a great hunter at all. And I'm telling these guys about all these coyotes that I'm calling up and I'm killing. And one day I called in this coyote. It was actually up here about pretty close to where I live now around Prague. I called up this coyote with two buddies, and he comes running up this old two-track road, and he's got a rabbit T-bone in his mouth. You know, I'll never forget watching that happen, you know, way back then when I'm 18, 19 years old. And I just thought, man, that's a cool scene. You know, I hadn't seen a whole lot of coyotes back then. So when you call up a coyote and you see a rabbit T-bone in its mouth, I thought it was pretty special, pretty cool. And I go to work, and I'm telling these guys, and it just so happened, oh, a couple of days later, I was over, you know, at a different place, critter calling. Before I even got set up, it's February the 26th. It's 2 days after my birthday, and I watch this doe come walking down this creek, and then here comes this big buck. You know, I'm talking 150, 160 class wide, beautiful buck. And here comes another one. And before I know it, these two bucks are fighting. And it's February the 26th. You know, a lot of deer have lost their antlers already. And I'm like, what in the world? So I'm sitting there watching them through my scope. I called my cousin Kyle, and I'm like, Kyle, I'm watching two bucks fight. He's like, really? What? And I'm like, I'm serious. I was like, I'm watching it right now, you know, and I'm giving him play-by-play what's going on. And he's like, no way. And so I watch them, and they go one, and one of them chases a doe back and forth. I don't know if it was a yearling that come in late. I don't know what the deal was. But February the 26th, I went back to work and tell them guys that, and they're like, there's no way. That didn't happen. You know, they're doing everything but just flat out calling me a liar. And I'm like, well, I don't blame you for not believing me, but I seen it. So within a week of that, I went and bought a video camera. And so that's when I started trying to videotape things that I did as an 18-year-old kid that, you know, them guys even around that I worked with, none of them were big coyote hunters, so they didn't know. I didn't realize at the time how well we had it back then. Mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't any pressure on coyotes. You'd go out there and just blow a critter call and sit there for a little bit if you had the wind right and you had a decent set, and call up coyotes and kill them. And it was all fresh ground, you know, which you know how important fresh ground is. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty neat. I'd video them coyotes with an old Sony with 8mm cassette tape. And, you know, I'd come to work and I didn't have any way of showing it. And I'd flip open my video camera and we'd just watch it right there on the screen. And they're like, man, that's neat, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that went on for a couple of years. I had a lot of fun with that. And then, you know, it was pretty well mouth calling back then. Mm-hmm. And then me and my buddy Scotty Smith, we killed four or five bobcats one year, and then I had a couple bobcats given to me, and I think we might have trapped one or two, and we took them to the first sale, and I think I made $700 or something. So I took half that and I bought my first electronic caller, a Fox Pro FX3. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't call a coyote up with that thing to save my life. I don't know what the deal was. I don't know if way back then I just was naive and I didn't know what I was doing. And I didn't. I know that I didn't. Mm-hmm. But I bet I didn't call up a handful of coyotes that first year using that electronic caller. So I went back to mouth calling. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I finally, you know, when you start coyote hunting, you start meeting other coyote hunters and you start kind of sharing strategies and whatnot. So I'm talking to all these people and they're having all this great luck with these electronic calls. And I'm like, man, I just can't do it. You know, I don't know if I'm playing it too loud. I don't know if I'm playing it too long. I don't know if I'm making a bad set. You know, I'm still young, trying to learn. And finally one day it kind of clicked that I wasn't really making great sets. I was setting kind of unorthodox really. And I still set up somewhat that way. But I would always point my gun straight downwind, which would make me now think I was hunting a crosswind, you know, mm-hmm. trying to get the coyotes out of where I thought they were. And, I mean, there for a long time, even just mouth calling, I could point my gun downwind and 90% of my coyotes I would kill within, you know, a 50-yard circle of downwind, mm-hmm. you know. But I would catch them then before they would catch my wind.
Yeah. Now, real quick, when you were using your electronic call, would you have it beside you or would you put it upwind of you?
I would put it upwind of me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what I was doing wrong. I just didn't really have the luck with it. And so finally, you know, a few years later passed and I end up getting the 24C. And I took that dude out and just started murdering coyotes. You know, you had all them pup stresses and you had all them vocals and you had, you know, some great sounding rabbits. And I don't know what it was. I don't know if I just didn't have confidence and was cut myself short with that FX3. Mm-hmm. But when I got that CS24C, it was phenomenal. It was lights out. You know, every time I went, I was calling up coyotes, it seemed like. Of course, there were a lot of fresh sounds that the coyotes had never heard also. Maybe yeah. I was hunting my places too much. I don't know. I mean, I was an 18, 19-year-old kid way back then. So, but it's pretty cool. I quit videotaping after my first video camera. broke down on me. And so I just kept coyote hunting, and we started the North Canadian Coyote Tournament, a good buddy of mine, Marcus Redunzel, in, I don't know, 12 years ago from now, whenever in the world that is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure it was our 12th year last year. And, you know, we had 6-8 teams in it the very first year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, good buddy of mine, Sean Morales, Jamie Eaton, Marcus Dunzel, Tommy Shamrock, David Clater, me, my cousin Lance, my buddy Shane Dockery, Brandon Carpenter, you know, we all get our teams together and we go out. And it took 3 coyotes to win that mm-hmm. that year, and which isn't really anything nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really don't know what the deal was then. We killed 2. We missed out on first place. And so I'm like, man, this is pretty cool. You know, you get to go out and see how you can compete against these other guys. You know, on a given day, under, you know, certain weather conditions, everybody's dealt the same cards basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so we start, I'm like, yeah, we're going to hunt this tournament the next year. And kind of, it was our yearly deal. You know, we'd hunt places and whatnot. And then I was like, well, now it's more competitive because the next year there were quite a few more teams. Mm-hmm. And the next year there were more teams. So I'm like, well, if it's getting more competitive, we're going to have to do our homework a little bit better and start laying our sets out a little bit better and be more efficient with our time and how many sets we can make. And kind of became a, I don't know. It's weird because I love the tournaments, but it started taking away from my going out and just coyote hunting with my buddies, you know, going out and having fun and making a couple of sets. You know, it became more of a challenge. We're saving all this ground now and we're not hunting it. And I kind of got off in left field a little bit. But,
that's all right. It
kind of took away from it a little bit. And then my partner, Brandon Carpenter, he moves out to Western Oklahoma around, well, I'm not going to say around where, but he moves out to Western Oklahoma. And, man, we go out there, and I've never called Western Oklahoma really. And it was a totally different ball game. And so Brandon Carpenter, he's gathering up all that he does hay, kind of like you. And so he's got all these hay fields and he's got access to all this land, and he starts talking to all of the neighbors and whatnot, and he starts gathering up land. And before I know it, you know, we've got enough places out there where we can call for 3 days straight, you know, and never hit the same property.
Mm-hmm.
And we started doing pretty good. We started moving a bunch of coyotes on these tournaments. 1 year we moved 21 coyotes. We only killed 9. We had quads coming in. We had 5 triples that day. It was unbelievable. We only missed 1. We should have killed 10. I think we killed the biggest. We ended up killing the biggest coyote and the smallest coyote that year. And walked out of there with $6,400.
Nice.
It was pretty crazy. You know,
yeah.
that North Canadian tournament, it grew from like 8 people to, I think that year there was 150 teams in it, something like that.
Hmm. Awesome.
You know, 130 to 150, and man, it was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I want to step back real quick for just a second. You know, going back to when you first got started, that 2005, you know, time period, were you just hunting some family land? Were you getting permission on other people's, you know, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I was getting from, well, actually all the guys that I worked with at the time, they're like, well, man, I got some land over here, you know, you come over here and coyote hunt. And so next thing you know, I was getting their neighbor's property, and because nobody was killing coyotes back then, so it was pretty easy to go and talk to somebody. Yeah, come coyote hunt.
Yeah.
I didn't have a lot of competition way back then like there are today.
Mm-hmm.
Today, you know, everybody's grandson and nephew and everybody wants to coyote hunt. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's a little bit harder to pick up ground for coyote hunting.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. You know, a good buddy of mine that used to hunt a bunch of tournaments, and it was kind of funny. That's kind of like, we were already kind of friends, but what kind of really brought us together was my family had land and he wanted to coyote hunt it. And, of course he would take me along, so it worked out. But yeah, you know, I was always amazed, like when he and I first started going together, I was always amazed because we'd go to, you know, a big property and, you know, we'd hunt it a couple times. We'd do real well, you know, a couple different spots is what I meant, you know, have a couple different sits on it. And then, you know, like a few weeks later, be like, hey, like, let's go kite hunting. He's like, no. And I was like, what? And, you know, he didn't want to hunt that property again until the next year, you know, because, yeah, you know, he didn't want to overhunt it. And so I learned all about that. But I can't imagine as like a 18 or 19 year old just getting into it, it had to be really hard to not overhunt all your spots.
It was. It was real hard. Mm-hmm. And I had some places that were very high percentage places. I had one farm, a dairy farm, that I don't know how many coyotes were on this place, but I bet I killed 12 coyotes off of that half section in one season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't even kill all of them.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Mm-hmm.
So real quick, I keep saying real quick, but I know none of this is super quick, but I want to hit on a little bit, just kind of like, how would you tweak your setup from hunting, you know, I'm going to say Eastern Oklahoma versus Western Oklahoma, you know, more timbered stuff, rolling stuff in the East to more wide open in the West, you know, like in the, when you're hunting in the East and you have clumps of trees and pastures and stuff, you can kind of, you know, you can somewhat guess, like, all right, I think coyotes might be here. The wind is working this way. You know, they might follow this tree line and that type of thing. So I guess I'm going to say they're a little bit more predictable, possibly. And then, you know, when you go out west and it's just a wide open, just talk about kind of the difference there and how you change your setups for each one.
Right. We was on a bunch of rolling sand hills pretty well. So the year that we did the best, we made a lot of almost road sets. You know, mm-hmm. we wouldn't get off the road 100 yards, but I think that was helping us because we weren't bumping coyotes. You know, mm-hmm. coyotes weren't seeing us or happened to be downwind of us, bedded down in the little plum thickets. Out in the Eastern Oklahoma, you know, you, of course, around here, I would go out and scout and I'd hear them and I'd know where they're at. And I'd wait on myself to get a good wind for a crosswind and go in there and set somewhere where I can see. And usually they'd, sure enough, try to circle downwind and get them killed that way. But out there, it was crazy. They would come. I've watched them run in from 3/4 mile out there and know that they ran from a mile.
Mm-hmm.
It's different, but I guess it's easier out there. You could see what's going on. You know, mm-hmm. if a coyote hangs up out there, you can see him out there versus in Eastern Oklahoma. If a coyote hangs up at 300 yards, there's more likely a clump of trees between mm-hmm. you and him. And you can kind of, once you see one, you can kind of read his body language and figure out how to get him to come on in. I don't know if I even answered your question properly there.
No, that was great. No, you did good. Yeah. All right. Cool. So you've talked about it a little bit, but I mean, nowadays, you know, if you went out and knocked on a couple doors, would you say it's easy to get permission, hard to get permission? Depends on where you're at. Talk about that a little bit.
It definitely depends on where you're at. You know, some of these old school guys around where I live now, I live around between Prague and Meeker now, some of these old school guys, they have a lot of coyote ground hemmed up. Some of your bigger ranches, they've got coyote hunters in there that, you know, they're not going to let just anybody because they've had that property lined up for years and been going out there and built a relationship with them. You know, about like deer hunting, mm-hmm. it's kind of the same deal. It's harder to get deer hunt land now than what it was 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I can still get permission to hunt, coyote hunt around here pretty good. I've built a reputation enough to where people can see the videos on my hunting page. And I actually get people, hey, you know, we got coyotes. Coyotes are coming to the backyard. Come over here. And I'm like, well, how much land do you got? And they're like, well, we got 5 acres. And I'm like, well, what about your neighbor? And they're like, oh, that's Farmer Joe. Well, do you think Farmer Joe would let me hunt? And I've actually gotten into some of my greatest places like that. Yeah, you know, tell him to come on out, you know, go out and I meet the guy and be polite and courteous and get permission to hunt it.
Gotcha. Awesome. So, you know, when you're looking for land, what sticks out to you? Like, what are you looking for in a property? You know, what makes you look at a place and say, man, I think there's a lot of coyotes there, or man, that looks awesome to hunt?
That's a good question. I mean, always around cattle's good. Somewhere where I can see a little bit. I'm not going to go and try to get permission to hunt a 160-acre clump of timber.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that you can't kill coyotes in there because you can.
Mm-hmm.
And usually in the late season, I will get in the timber. when I can't call coyotes out into the fields, I'm grabbing my shotgun and I'm going to those little fingers, those little draws, those little creek lines, and I'm hunting the edges of them. And there's nothing more exciting than mouth calling in the woods with a shotgun in your hands and hearing coyotes running, you know, and hear the leaves crunching before you ever even see the coyote running in at you. I mean, that's exciting.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool, pretty intense.
Nice.
It's a lot harder to film, and I don't do it as much as I should because I've videoed some amazing shotgun kills, you know, real close, coming in fast, some really good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, and there's a lot of times you just can't video it, especially when you're self-filming.
Yeah.
And you mentioned season just a little bit ago. What time frame are you usually hunting? You know, most people aren't hunting in the heat of the summer, obviously. So when would you say you kind of start and finish?
So I start my numbers over usually around June, mm-hmm. and I don't hunt much from April to probably March to June. I don't hunt very much. I usually stop at the end of February, and I give them a break for about 3 months. But then come about June, I start hitting them again because all my fawns are hitting the ground. I'm a big time deer hunter also.
Gotcha.
All my fawns are hitting the ground, and then coyotes, they haven't heard a call in 3 months. They hadn't been messed with. You got the pups. I mean, we've already killed 6 since June. Most of them have been here within the last 3 weeks. You got all your farmers cutting hay. Mm-hmm. Man, I'm seeing coyotes here, and I'm seeing coyotes there. You know, I got 1 mile section over here I just picked up this year. They were having a bad coyote problem, and my farmer, He calls me up and he's like, man, we got coyotes everywhere. You know, they're just everywhere. You're going to come start killing them. So mm-hmm. I went over there and called up 5, I think maybe a month ago,
mm-hmm.
and killed 2 of them by myself. I didn't take the video camera. It was the first time that I stepped foot on this property. And these farmers are wanting them killed. They don't mm-hmm. care if I video it or not. They're actually right. wanting them killed, and killed 2 out of 5 by myself. And then me and my little neighbor, Preston Hodges, we went back up there. Oh, 3 weeks, a month ago, called up one and shot it, and it got away. I shot it right in the nose. It video and had 2 cameras going. He come up to a terrace and held up on me, and I had my scope down low in case he came in real hot. You know, I'd have a bigger field of view, and he held up on a terrace at 100 yards, and all I could see was his head. And, you know, I just tried to put it on his head, and as soon as the trigger broke, I knew I was on his snout. And anyway, shot him right in the snout. He runs off and gets away. We went back the next weekend in the morning and went on the other side of the mile section, called for just a little bit. Female comes up, he shoots it. And I was like, man, I haven't really been on this property. So we packed up our stuff and we just moved 300 yards up over the roll of this hill, kind of to see how the land laid out. We were scouting, but we were scouting for future. Also found another blackberry thicket and we backed up into it standing up, and it was a perfect saddle. I told Preston, I said, if a coyote comes, because we heard coyotes everywhere that evening that I shot that one in the snout to our south, I said, if a coyote's down there and he hears it, he's going to try to work the other side of this saddle and circle around and get downwind. And sure enough, I hit pup in a stress or one of them pup fights or something, and here he come blazing in. And Preston got it shot on video, just picture perfect. We had two more off of that place. You know, we killed or shot 5 of them, lost 1. Go to the next hay field, set a call up on a round bell. We're 75 yards off the road, sitting on buckets right beside a round bell, and turn on a squeal baby jack. And it was just one little bitty finger of timber, and the rest of it was pretty wide open. I was like, man, we're going to have to be quiet, get in here, because if there is a coyote in here, we're going to be set up pretty close to him. Mm-hmm. And within a minute, coyote breaks the tree line, comes out there, and he shoots it and kills it. But he was wanting to hunt this other piece of property that same farmer has, but it was a wrong set, you know, and he's a younger mm-hmm. coyote hunter, so he don't know a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him when we was driving around, we drove by there and there's an old wool pad. He's like, man, we need to go hunt that. And I'm like, the wind's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh man, we can make it happen. I was like, Preston, I was like, I've been there and I've done that more times than you can count. You're going to educate them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worth it. It ain't going to be no good. we'll save that spot and we'll hunt it when we have a lot higher percentage. You know, you can't force a coyote.
Mm-hmm.
They are smart, very intelligent animals. You got to play the odds. You got to play the numbers and make a high percentage set.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like we need to clarify just for our listeners in case some of them aren't coyote hunters. You know, a sit, just kind of like in deer hunting. You know, in deer hunting, if you sit in the morning and the evening, most people would call that two sits. You know, and so with coyote hunting, you know, basically a call sequence is a sit. So you call,
yes.
You either kill one and you don't, and then you move to another spot, and that would be a second. So you have multiple sits in an afternoon or whatever. I feel like
right.
We should clarify that for our listeners.
Absolutely.
And that kind of brings up – or go ahead.
Yeah, that Preston, he couldn't believe that morning when we killed that one, and then we moved 300 yards just over the hill and called again. When we got done, he was like, that goes against everything I've ever thought. He said, I would have never dreamed that we could just move 300 yards, mm-hmm. You know, after making a 30-minute set and call again and kill up another coyote. Because mm-hmm. he wasn't shooting suppressed then. And
yeah.
He is now.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't then, and I was like, yeah, I was like, man, you know, you're just a different angle.
Mm-hmm.
The sound's getting a little bit further, you know, over this hill, and you know, it was pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty neat.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's cool getting them younger guys that don't really know. Like he would have, if I hadn't been there, he would have forced that other set by the wolf pad,
mm-hmm.
and he wouldn't have had any luck there. And then the next time he went there, the coyotes, you know, probably more than likely would have been call shy because more than likely they would have got downwind of him in that draw and winded him before he ever even seen him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm sure this varies greatly depending on terrain, but I did want to ask, you know, like kind of what your distance is, you know, how close will you do a set? How far away do you think you need to do a set? And obviously that's, you know, there's a lot of variance to that, but do you have some kind of a rule of thumb or ballpark you go by?
Man, when we're out west, I like to hunt, man, I like to have at least a half a section
mm-hmm.
per set out west.
Mm-hmm.
Back here at home, man, I have sit there and called and killed coyotes and moved 200, 300 yards and called and killed coyotes again. It just kind of depends on the terrain and where you think they're at and the time of day also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, later on in the evenings, it seems like, or early in the mornings, the coyotes are on the move. They're up on their feet, and you never know what's mouse around out in the field. And you know, you change your angle up just a little bit, and you know, getting to come in. And you got your boundaries also. You know, a coyote just sometimes won't cross a creek,
mm-hmm.
or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yep, makes sense. And then this one also kind of a two part question, just kind of your calling sequence, like. You know, how long will you give a sit? And, you know, like if you, let's say you shoot a coyote, you know, real quick, you know, a couple minutes in, are you going to continue to sit and keep calling for a while? And then on the other side of that, how long will you call without seeing something until you're like, all right, it's time to, you know, move on?
That all depends on if I carry all my camera equipment in or not. If I mm. carry two cameras in a bucket and it's summertime, like what it is now,
mm-hmm.
I'm making one set. You know, it's hot right now, and that's a lot of gear to pack in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I'll go out and I'll make a 45-minute or an hour-long set.
Hmm.
You know, especially when you're taking the video cameras and whatnot. And
yeah.
If you kill a coyote early, early in your call, more than likely there's another coyote that's heard you.
Mm-hmm.
So usually I'll sit there and try to trigger them. Sometimes. Sometimes this time of year, you got to, it's almost like fishing. You got to throw different sounds at them and get them to just hit their trigger and get them to come in.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's say you're sitting for 45 minutes. Are you calling consistently or will you do, you know, maybe 15 minutes of calling, take a 5-10 minute break and continue on?
Absolutely. Especially this time of a year. You know, if I go out an hour, like the other night, we went out an hour before dark, and I called and I wanted to be heard. Started out with a parahowl, I think, and I wanted to be heard, wanted coyotes in the area to know there's another coyote out there. And I waited for a little while, and then I went into rabbit. It's basic, standard little scenarios that I go through and a lot of people go through. And then I sit there. After that coyote's heard it, he's heard it. Mm-hmm. I'll sit there for 5 or 10 minutes, and then I'll go into your pups, just pup fights, pup distress, and I'll play that long enough for him to hear it, and I'll sit there. I'll turn it off, and I'll sit there for another 10 minutes. And it seems like I get more coyotes nowadays that are maybe educated. Mm-hmm. Seems like I get them to come in longer in the set. You know, they're in your 30-minute, 45-minute mark, you know, way later. They're educated. They're leery. Maybe, like the other night, I was talking to Sean Morales. He's a great coyote hunting buddy of mine. Does crosswind guide service. I don't know if you ever heard of him down here at Texoma. He loves coyote hunting, and so we call and we tell each other kind of what we've been doing and what's working. And this coyote the other night, it didn't come in until it was nearly dark, and I don't know if it's because I finally played a sound that triggered it, or if that coyote waited on a little bit of the cover of darkness, you know, for the sun to come down to where it just had a little bit more, it felt more comfortable coming out when it was a little bit darker. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that coyote was doing. I'm pretty sure I know right where that coyote was at, and I'm pretty sure it was just waiting on the cover of darkness, or maybe I hit a sound that just triggered it. Mm-hmm. I'm not real sure. Hmm. But I mean, different times of year, you know, when it's tournaments, I'm a numbers guy. Mm-hmm. It's 20 minutes and I'm out.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to concentrate on them coyotes that are fresh and green and make as many sets as what we can and go by the numbers. You know, you waste 30 minutes on a set when you could have made maybe two sets or made three instead of two. Mm-hmm. That third set, you could have picked up a double where maybe you would have only picked up one at the longer set.
Right.
Well, it just kind of depends. Mm-hmm. All just kind of depends. And, you know, making a good solid set, if I'm confident there's coyotes in the area and they can't get my wind, I'm gonna do whatever I can to push their buttons and get them to come in.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right, I'm gonna change gears just a little bit here. If there's one thing I learned hanging out with some coyote hunters is that they love their guns, and a lot of them love their wildcat, you know, kind of crazy rounds. And so, I guess, what do you shoot? Do you you know, do you have certain guns that you will and won't shoot? You know, like you said, I think you said earlier you started out, you know, shooting a 22-250. That's what I shoot most of the time. But I know there's also some people that get pretty crazy with their guns. So talk about guns for a few minutes.
Right. So I've been shooting a Savage Predator Hunter multi-in and a 22-250 for a lot of years now. It's my go-to. It's good. It's flat shooting. With that suppressor, it's quiet, no recoil. It's, you know, it's a great round. I've got it really figured out on the running coyotes. It's faster. I got an Armalite 308 AR-10 that shoots like I've never shot before. It'll shoot a half a minute at 100 yards. It's unbelievable. And I got a Night4 scope on it, and I like the glass on it. I probably need to take that scope off and put it on my 22-250. Mm-hmm. But, man, that 308 just won't hardly kill coyotes. Mm-hmm. I took it to the tournament last year, and I killed four coyotes, and all four of them moved. Mm-hmm. All four of them spun, ran off. You'd have to go track them in that tall weeds and, you know, that scrub brush and whatnot. Like, mm-hmm. to never find them, and it'd be a perfect heart shot. But that, mm-hmm. that slower 308 just didn't do it for me. The 22-250, it's fast. It knocks them down. Any of them 22 calibers are amazing. Mm-hmm. But during tournaments, besides this last year, and I know you're probably going to laugh at me, and a lot of people have, but I take my 300 WSM.
Gotcha.
I've out in western Oklahoma, the wind's blowing 20 miles an hour every time you go out there, and I don't know how many times I've had to shoot through, you know, 30 foot of grass to get mm-hmm. to a cloud in that tall grass out in western Oklahoma, and that 22-250, it just don't do it.
Yeah.
That 300 WSM, it's my most accurate, you know, my best scope. I know it the best out to 500 yards or so. And, that's just, if I do happen to try to pick up a runner and I hit it back at that 300 WSM, we'll slow it down enough to where we can get it killed usually,
mm-hmm.
if it don't kill it anyway.
Yeah.
Mainly 22-250 and that 300 WSM. That's what I shoot.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah, I know 243s are popular, or any, you know, 7mm type round.
Right.
And you know, a lot of people, I think, you know, if they're just a casual hunter, or, you know, maybe they've shot a couple of coyotes out of their deer blind, you know, a lot of people are just going to, you know, take their deer rifle, which is fine. But I would say almost more important than the caliber of the rifle is the glass on top.
Absolutely.
Because one, you know, a lot of people don't think about this, but you're shooting a much smaller critter than a deer. And they're just as, if not more, camouflaged, and you know, you might have to reach out there a little further. And so, do you like like, are you more concerned about a high power scope, or are you more concerned about glass quality? Talk about scopes a little bit.
So I used to have a Bushnell Elite 4200, which the bottom end was 6 power. It was 6 to 24, you know, and I thought, oh, that's what I want for coyote hunting. You know, I'll be able to, you know, see them real good out there at 300-400 yards and whatnot. And then I got to realizing my field of view was absolutely horrible when they were coming and charging in at 50 yards.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely horrible. So I dropped down to I got picked up by Cellmark for, to be a pro staff for my thermal scope for my pig hunting,
mm-hmm.
just from them watching my videos. I got in with Kevin Reese down there, and he started watching my videos and seeing the traffic on them. And so I got in with him, and I picked up a Sightmark 4 to 16 power scope.
Mm-hmm.
And man, the glass is really clear. I like the crosshairs. It's a pretty good scope. It's not my Night Force that's on my 300 WSM by any means, but mm-hmm. it's a pretty good scope. But I love the low end. I like mm-hmm. the 4. I would never shoot anything higher than a 4 on your low end, just because you lose that field of view on your coyotes that are charging in.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones that you've got to kill. You know, when you get a coyote inside of 100 yards, which happens more than probably not. I mean, I probably kill most of my coyotes inside of 100, you know, inside of 150 for sure. But that field of view, I think, is more important than being able to shoot them out there,
mm-hmm.
you know, over 300.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's just a young hunter type thing. I wouldn't even say inexperience. I'm talking more age. But, you know, everybody's way more concerned about the top end of the scope than the low end. And that's one big change that I've made just, you know, over the course of my hunting career. I don't think I'd ever buy anything unless it was just a strictly target gun. But as far as hunting, I don't think I'd ever want something with a low end over 4 power. A lot of my hog guns, I actually prefer. I have a Zeiss 2x10 that I absolutely love for hogs, because I'm usually not shooting super far. And you never know when that hog's going to be super close and you need that wide field of view.
Yes, you do. 100%.
So
it took me a while to figure that out, and then once I changed, I was like, that's just retarded for me to have 6 power on my low end. It's so much harder for you to find that target
mm-hmm.
when 6 power is your low end. You know, and then my daughter, she started shooting that gun a little bit, and it's, you know, a kid, she couldn't get on target hardly. I mean, you just about have to point the gun for her in that direction and let her find it. But
mm-hmm. Awesome. All right. Well, the way I want to kind of close coyotes out is, I just kind of want you to like walk me through your process. So, you know, you're out in the field, you're in your truck, you're about to get out. Kind of just walk me through, you know, you do this, you're looking for this, you're setting up here, you're, you know, maybe waiting before your call sequence or starting your call sequence. Just kind of walk me through your whole process, basically from truck to truck.
Right. All right. So I usually know where I'm going according to the wind. I'm looking at the weather. I need to know which way the wind's blowing. I need to know where I think the coyotes are or where I know the coyotes are. And I'm a real big crosswind hunter. I like for the coyotes to, I don't like eating the wind 100%. I feel like if a coyote really can't get downwind of what he wants, then sometimes they won't come. Sometimes mm-hmm. they do, but but I think a lot of your more mature coyotes won't. So I like a crosswind a lot. I like to, like on that mile section that we hunted, I went out there and the wind was blowing from left to right. I knew my coyotes were to the south of us, and I knew they were going to circle around and use this saddle to try to cut, because they're going to try to cut your wind. I mean, 90% of the time, they may wait till they get 100 yards to start cutting your wind, or they may start cutting your wind out there at 350 yards. So I like to see the wind direction and know where my coyotes are and make sure, you know, you can't have the wind blowing straight towards them, obviously. But I don't really like eating it neither, 100%. In the woods, it's different. I can eat the wind 100% in the woods, I feel like, because they got the cover of the woods. You know, they usually come blazing in no matter what when you're in the woods and they got that cover. But kind of depends on your layout. You know, I do want a vantage point. I shoot off of a Reaper grip. So in the last 4 years, I stand up on probably 90% of my sets. Because you can see over those terraces, and you can see over the hill a little bit further, and I can find a coyote coming in way faster standing up than I could if I was sitting on the ground or sitting on a bucket. Mm-hmm. So I try to set up on a crosswind and wait for them to come in and try to circle my downwind and catch them in between.
Gotcha.
That's probably a horrible explanation.
That's good. Talk about real quick, like, you know, I don't expect you to go through your whole call sequence, and I'm sure it's a little different, but just kind of like where's your call in relation to where you're hunting, and how do you use, you know, like when you get set up, do you wait 5 minutes before you turn the call on? Do you just kind of walk out there and kick it on to start working? Walk through that a little bit.
So sometimes I wait. Sometimes I do wait. I'll sit there for 5 minutes and get everything set up. Of course, I'm running two cameras a lot of times this time of year. So you set up all the cameras, and I usually set the call upwind of me, maybe towards the crosswind if I'm hunting a crosswind. So, you know, if I'm looking to the east and the wind's out of the north, I'm gonna probably walk northeast and set it up out there about 40 or 50 yards or so. You know, if it's a wide open field, sometimes I'll go set it up on top of a hay bale, a little bit further away from me. That coyote that we killed the other day, I had that, we were so close quarters to where I thought the coyote was. We were probably only 70 yards from the tree line. And I took that call about 50 yards straight to my south and set it up on top of a round bale because I knew this coyote was going to come out of this timber. And when he was looking towards that call, I didn't want him to be looking towards us. So, you know, it kind of helped us intercept him between coming out of the timber and looking at the caller or going towards the caller.
Gotcha.
And it all varies. You know, sometimes depending on, I like putting my call up on a tripod out in western Oklahoma in that tall grass. It seems like the sound carries a whole lot better. Mm-hmm. I'm running the Lucky Duck Revolt now. So I got a small tripod on it and I love that call. The way that you can rotate it, you know, and you could throw that sound to the south, or you could spin it over and throw it to the north, or you could pan it back and forth. That gives a little more realistic to the calling, to the sound, you know, throwing that sound at different angles. If you get the same, you know, ambient sound blowing in the same direction, it kind of sounds the same. But if you start turning it, it looks more like rabbits, you know, squalling, and he's flopping around and turning his head and throwing that sound in different directions, and brings more realistic to the set.
Hmm. Nice. That's awesome. Yeah. I guess I've been out of the game a little too long. I didn't know they had rotating calls, but that makes a lot of sense.
Oh man, it's the coolest thing ever. They're fixing to come out with the Revolt 2, which is about like the Lucky Duck Roughneck, except for it does spin on a tripod, just like the Revolt or it may be the Revolt 2, but I think it's the newer collar on top of this spinning device. Hmm. But I can't wait for it to come out. It's a good one.
Awesome. Sweet. Well, man, we covered a lot there. I can't help but talk about hogs just a little bit, just a few minutes. I think the biggest question I have is, do you have an easier time getting permission to hunt hogs than you do coyotes? because I have several people message me all the time, have for over the years, like, you know, people from out of state wanting, you know, in a place where they don't have hogs, and basically asking, you know, if they come down, how easy is it to, you know, knock on a door and get permission? So I don't know how much of that you do, or if you, you know, kind of already have all the land you need, but is it easier to get permission to hunt hogs than it is coyotes or deer?
So I don't have a whole lot just right here close to home. I go to Kearney with a good buddy of mine, Craig Hunt, and he's got access to thousands of acres where they're feeding thousands of cattle, and they got feed bunks and creek feeders, and I'm sure you've been around those. If you got a feed bunk or a creek feeder, you're going to have pigs.
Oh yeah.
And man, they absolutely love it when we come out and hunt them. You can get permission to hunt pigs pretty easy. Mm-hmm. But it's big, they're getting to be more thermal guys in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
The more pigs that we get, and you know, you could show them videos, and anytime anybody sees a thermal video, they're like, that is awesome. And, and people are buying them. And then, I mean, pigs are probably the number one hunted animal in Oklahoma right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least the on the rise, the most, because it's neat. You know, you're driving around at night with thermal and glass and all these places and seeing all these things that, you know, almost should be illegal. It's it's a different ball game. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, for sure. Awesome. Well, man, I have more questions, but I feel like we're at a pretty good stopping point here. So I think we're going to go ahead and shut her down. But, before we do, real quick, why don't you give everybody, you know, how they can get a hold of you, or, you know, where they can see your videos and all that good stuff.
So my Facebook page is Dwayne Carter Hunting, and it was pretty funny how that came around. I started making my own videos, and you know, a lot of the people on my regular Facebook were like, you know, they don't care to see a bunch of dead animals all the time. So I started Dwayne Carter Hunting, DCH, and I put all of my content on that pretty well. And then DCH on YouTube, and it's just DCH. It's just as simple as that. If you're looking for it, you may have to put DCH and then hunting. And you can get on there and check out a lot of my deer hunts and coyote hunts and thermal pig hunts and turkey hunting and bow fishing and all that stuff. Instagram, I think it's DCH also.
Awesome.
So.
Awesome, man. Well, I really appreciate you coming on and giving us an education today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. All righty, man. Well, we will talk to you later. Thanks again.
All right. We'll see you, John.
Thank you, Dwayne, for coming on the episode and giving us a great interview. That was fantastic. I sure learned a lot, and it brought back a lot of memories for me. You know, like I said, it's been a couple years since I've done any real coyote hunting. Used to do quite a bit, and yeah, it brought back a lot of good memories for me. So I hope you guys enjoyed it too. I hope it was educational for y'all. Maybe it inspired somebody to get out there and try it. And yeah, if anybody has any questions, feel free to shoot me a message or an email or Dwayne. Because it's an exciting way to hunt. It's an awesome thing to go after. And, you know, one of the cool things about coyote hunting is, you know, just the barrier to entry is not there like it is to deer hunting. You know, you don't have to pay for a lease. You know, you basically buy some cheap camo and a rifle and get out there and do it. And so, yeah, it's a great way to get people into hunting. It's action-packed. And it can be a good challenge still, too. So. But, yeah, that's going to do it for this week. And so I hope you guys have had a good one. Stay out of the heat and get ready, because as I keep saying, this fall is coming quick, and hunting season is going to be here before you know it. So get out there and get prepared, shoot your bow, and have a fantastic week. See you guys later.